One, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Jill Robbins, Mario Ritter Jr., and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Jill Robbins.
Reports of higher energy costs are causing concern around the world as pressure increases on businesses and people who buy goods and services. The biggest shortage, the Associated Press reports, is a lack of natural gas in Europe. European countries import 90% of their supply. Much of it comes from Russia. European prices have increased by 5 times since the start of the year. Experts blame several events for the gas shortage. They say demand increased after coronavirus restrictions were lifted. They say the past cold winter reduced reserves. And the summer was less windy than usual, so less wind energy was generated. Europe's chief supplier, Russia's Gazprom, held back extra gas supplies during the summer to build up supplies in Russia. In addition to that, China's electricity demand has come back after the COVID-19 pandemic. China has bought up limited supplies of liquid natural gas, which is transported by ship, not pipeline. There also are limited plans to export natural gas from the United States.
It is difficult to say how long higher fossil fuel prices will last, said Claudia Kempfert. She is an energy expert at the German Institute for Economic Research in Berlin. The long-term answer that has to be taken out of this is to invest in renewables and energy saving, she said. Renewable energy comes from the wind and sun. The European Union's Executive Commission urged member nations recently to speed up approvals for renewable energy projects. The group said clean energy is the best insurance against price shocks in the future. However, some gas-dependent European industries are cutting back on manufacturing products. German chemical companies BASF and SKW Piesteritz have cut the production of ammonia, an important part of fertilizer. That caused a problem for Hermann Grief, a farmer in Germany's area of southern Bavaria. He said he could not buy fertilizer for his crops. There's no product, no price, not even a contract, he said. It's a situation we've never seen before. He said the situation might result in a smaller crop in the coming year. High energy prices already were hitting German farmers who need diesel fuel to operate machinery and to keep animals warm, said Grief. He grows corn to make biofuel, or fuel made from crops.
People in the northern part of the world are expected to face higher costs for heating this winter. That includes in the United States, where officials have warned home heating prices could rise as much as 54%. Governments in Spain, France, Italy, and Greece have announced measures to help low-income households. The European Union has urged similar aid. Much depends on the weather. Europe's gas reserves are usually rebuilt over the summer, but now they are at unusually low levels. A cold winter in both Europe and Asia would risk European storage levels dropping to zero, says Massimo Di Odoardo. He is with the research business Wood Mackenzie. That would leave Europe dependent on additional natural gas from a new Russian pipeline or on Russia sending more gas through pipelines in Ukraine. The new Nord Stream 2 pipeline beneath the Baltic Sea has not been approved in Europe. It may not begin operations until next year. Kempfert in Berlin said Russian suppliers' decision to sell less gas on the open market shows they want to put pressure on the early certification of Nord Stream 2.
In China, power cuts have followed increased prices for coal and gas. Electric companies in some parts of the country are limiting electricity. Factories in Jiangsu province and Zhejiang in the southeast temporarily shut down in mid-September. That could affect export suppliers. Chen Chen Jewelry Factory is in Dongyang, a city in Zhejiang. The factory faced power cuts over 10 days, General Manager Joanna Lan said. The factory makes hairbands, paper products, and gifts. 80 to 90% of its goods are for export to the U.S., Europe, and other markets. Orders were delayed by at least a week, Lan said. We had to buy generators. The biggest city in the northeast, Shenyang, turned off streetlights and elevators and cut power to restaurants and shops a few hours a day. Jenny Yang is an energy market expert at IHS Market. She said China's gas imports have jumped. However, increasing demand in Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan also has helped push up prices around the world. In Brazil, higher gas and oil prices are a problem because a lack of rain has made hydroelectric dams less productive. That has made electricity more costly. Rosa Benta is a 67-year-old from São Paulo. She fears she will no longer be able to provide for her unemployed family members. Several times, energy company Enel called me saying I had debt. I told them, I'm not going to stop feeding my son to pay you, Benta said. If they want to cut the electricity, they can come. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Scientists have discovered new evidence that humans used tobacco at least 12,000 years ago. The evidence was found by an archaeological team at a site in a desert in the western American state of Utah. The dig centered on an ancient fireplace built by a group of hunter-gatherers. The scientists found 4 burned seeds of a wild tobacco plant, along with other objects. The discovery is reported to be the oldest evidence of tobacco use. Among other objects found at the Utah site were stone tools and bird bones. The scientists believe the birds had been food for the community. Until now, the earliest documented use of tobacco was from a finding of the drug nicotine inside an ancient pipe in Alabama, a southern state. The pipe, used for smoking, dated back 3,300 years ago. The new find was reported in a study that appeared in the scientific publication Nature Human Behavior. The researchers believe the group may have smoked the tobacco or possibly put pieces of the plant in their mouths. They think the users were seeking the pleasant effects nicotine produces in the body. The first known tobacco use is linked to native communities in North and South America. Its use spread worldwide following the arrival of Europeans more than 5 centuries ago. Today, tobacco represents a worldwide public health crisis. The World Health Organization estimates there are 1.3 billion tobacco users across the world. The WHO blames tobacco use for more than 8 million deaths each year. Darren Duke is an archaeologist with the Far Western Anthropological Research Group in Nevada. He was the lead writer of the study. Duke told Reuters news agency that worldwide he considers tobacco the king of intoxicant plants. And now we can directly trace its cultural roots to the Ice Age, he added. The seeds belonged to a wild kind of desert tobacco called Nicotiana attenuata, which still grows in the area. This species was never domesticated, but is used by indigenous people in the area to this day, Duke said. Scientists say the area was likely marshland at the time the fireplace was used. The area had a cool climate during the Ice Age period. The remains of the fire were found in areas where wind has been blowing surface material away since the marshland fully dried up about 9,500 years ago. We know very little about their culture, Duke said of the hunter-gatherers. The most interesting part of the find, he said, is the social window it gives to a simple activity in an undocumented past. My imagination runs wild, he added. Duke said tobacco domestication happened thousands of years later elsewhere on the continent. For example, in the southwestern and southeastern United States, and in Mexico. Some researchers have theorized that tobacco may have been the first plant domesticated in North America. They believe this happened because of the substance's socio-cultural effects rather than for food purposes. Duke said he thinks the find provides clear evidence that the hunter-gatherers were experienced growers of tobacco long before food requirements later drove investments in agriculture. I'm Brian Lynn.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Abraham Lincoln won the presidential election in November of 1860. When he took office several months later, he faced the most serious crisis in American history. The Southern states had finally acted on their earlier threats. They had begun to leave the Union over the issue of slavery. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant talk about this critical time in American history.
The Southern states did not want Abraham Lincoln to win the election of 1860. Lincoln was a Republican, and the Republican Party opposed slavery. Lincoln never said he wanted to end slavery in the South. He did not believe anyone had the right to do so. Yet he did not want to see slavery spread to other parts of the United States. Lincoln told Southerners, "You think slavery is right and should be extended, while we think it is wrong and should be limited. That, I suppose, is the trouble. It surely is the only important difference between us."
Pro-slavery extremists felt this difference was enough, and they were sure Lincoln and his Republicans would soon win control of Congress and the Supreme Court. Before long, they thought, the Constitution would be changed. Slavery would become illegal everywhere. Even if this did not happen, Southerners were worried. Unless slavery could spread, they said, the slave population in the South would become too large. In time, blacks and whites would battle for control. One or the other would be destroyed. So, even before the presidential election, Southerners began discussing what they would do if Abraham Lincoln won.
Early in October, the governor of South Carolina, William Gist, wrote letters to the governors of other Southern states. He said they should agree on what action to take if Lincoln became president. Gist said South Carolina would call a state convention as soon as the election results were made official. If any state decided to leave the Union, he said, South Carolina would follow. If no other state decided to leave, then South Carolina would secede by itself. Governor Gist received mixed answers. Two states, Alabama and Mississippi, said they would not secede alone, but they said they would join others that made this decision. Two more states, Louisiana and Georgia, said they would not secede unless the North acted against them. And one state, North Carolina, said it had not yet decided what to do. No Southern governor, except William Gist of South Carolina, seemed willing to lead the South out of the Union.
Abraham Lincoln was elected president on November 6, 1860. South Carolina exploded with excitement at the news. To many of the people there, Lincoln's victory was a signal that ended the state's ties to the Union. To them, it was the beginning of Southern independence. Both United States senators from South Carolina resigned. So did a federal judge and the collector of federal taxes. United States flags were lowered. State flags were raised in their place. The state legislature agreed to open a convention on December 17th. The convention would make the final decision on leaving the Union. Several other Southern states did the same.
This idea of leaving the Union, secession, split North and South just as much as slavery. Southerners claimed they had the right to secede peacefully. Northerners disagreed. They said secession was treason. They said it would lead to civil war. In the months before Lincoln's inauguration, President James Buchanan tried to deal with the situation. First, he proposed a convention of all the states. The purpose of the convention would be to work out differences between North and South. The Southern members of Buchanan's cabinet rejected this idea. The second proposal was a strong policy statement on secession. The statement would include an opinion by the Attorney General. It said the government could use force, if necessary, to keep states in the Union. The Southern cabinet members rejected this idea, too.
President Buchanan had to settle for a moderate policy statement on secession. It said the president could send troops into a state to help federal marshals enforce the rulings of federal courts. But if federal judges resigned, there would be no federal court rulings to enforce. Therefore, to send troops to a state where federal officers had resigned, such as South Carolina, would be an act of war against the state, and only Congress had the constitutional power to declare war. Buchanan accepted this statement. He was only too happy to let Congress decide what to do.
There was little chance that Congress could do anything. Congressmen from both North and South already had made decisions that could not and would not be changed easily. Most of the congressmen from states in the Deep South supported secession. They did not want to remain in the Union. Many congressmen from states in the North had been elected because they promised to keep slavery from spreading to the Western territories. They did not plan to break their promises. A few lawmakers hoped President Buchanan, in his yearly message to Congress, might propose a compromise.
Buchanan began by denouncing Northern abolitionists. He said they were responsible for the present problem. Their interference, he said, had created a great fear of slave rebellions in the South. Then Buchanan called on the South to accept the election of Abraham Lincoln. He said the election of a citizen to the office of president should not be a reason for dissolving the Union. Buchanan declared that the Constitution gave no state the right to leave. But, he admitted, if a state did secede, there was little the federal government could do. The fact is, Buchanan said, that our Union rests upon public opinion. It can never be held together by the blood of its citizens in civil war. If it cannot live in the hearts of its people, then it must one day die.
Buchanan proposed to Congress that it offer a constitutional amendment on the question of slavery. He said the amendment should recognize the right to own slaves as property in states where slavery was permitted. It should protect this right in all territories until the territories became states. And it should end all state laws that interfered with the return of escaped slaves to their owners. No one liked President Buchanan's message to Congress. Northerners did not like his declaration of federal weakness in the face of secession. Southerners did not like his declaration that secession was unconstitutional. The message did nothing to change the situation. Soon after it was read to Congress, South Carolina opened its secession convention.
Delegates to the convention would make the final decision if South Carolina would remain in the Union or secede. There was little question how they would vote. A committee wrote a secession resolution. The resolution said simply that the people of South Carolina were ending the agreement of 1788, in which the state had approved the Constitution of the United States. It said the Union, existing between South Carolina and the United States of America, was being dissolved. The committee offered the resolution to the convention on December 20th, 1860. There was no debate. The delegates voted immediately. No one voted against it.
South Carolina had seceded. But what must it do now? There was the problem of property in South Carolina owned by the federal government. The convention continued to meet to work out details of South Carolina's new position in the world.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.